Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the Breaking the Plane podcast. I am your host, Joe Scher, along with my co-host, Burge, a.k.a. Burge the Goalie, our king, our third chair, who is fastly approaching number one in my heart, Hogan, and then my brother from another mother, Kojak, Brennan Allen. How we doing, boys? Burge, how you doing? You sounds like you're having a great day for the lead up to this episode.
I'm exhausted. That's all it comes down to. I'm exhausted. Hogan can make his faces as he's doing right now. Make those faces, dude. Dude, I got thrown up on. I got shit on. I got screamed at.
That's not going to change in this in here.
I still enjoy. I can give it back to you and not feel guilty about it. I can give it back to you and not feel guilty about it. With my kids, I feel guilty about it. Yes, it's been a rough week. So far, and it's only fucking Tuesday.
Yeah, we don't
want. How you doing?
Memory. We don't want a formative memory of your boy being Daddy Allen. No, we don't want that. But I'm doing pretty good. I am playing left-handed. We've got Joe left to his own devices in his new home in South Carolina, which is a scary thought. But I got a list. I got a honey-do list. Some instructions on how to do everything in my life from Kayla, which was great. So I should be all right. we'll see how I look at the end of this fucking week. I look like a fucking grizzled old man. But other than that, we're good. Got a tea time tomorrow, got a tea time this weekend. That's all I really give a shit about right now. Hogan, how's the start of your week? How you doing, buddy?
I'm so good. I am the opposite of Burge. I'm loving life. Everything's fantastic. I'm just kidding. I know.
I was gonna say, are you though? Are you
hey, I'm good. I'm rocking. I'm ready to roll. I'm not as good as our boy Joe over here sinking that shot that we all got to see.
Hell on yes.
Twitter.
Hell yes.
Oh, baby. We
can turn this into a golf podcast in 2 seconds.
Don't drive it. Half not like second. You driving it. Oh. Anyway, Kojak, what's going on with you, man? I'm loving that shirt, by the way. Let's fucking go.
Yo, like that. Put it away, both of you. We are sponsored by Crisco, but we are not to use it on the podcast.
Did you guys coordinate like your outfits or something? Like, seems like it.
No. Yeah, Kojak did a whole load of laundry just to make sure that was fucking clean for tonight.
Yep. I appreciate it.
All right, so today on the podcast, we'll be diving into the quarterback situation down in Texas.
See you later.
Between Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning. Just kidding. Kojak, how you doing, buddy?
Nah, you do you, bro. We're doing great. I'm going to go myself. I'll see you guys at the end of the episode.
Well, you're doing like the robot every time you move in your fucking video right now. I'm glad the audio is coming through okay.
Yeah, because I decided to live in fucking Danville, New Hampshire, where there's nothing but fucking sticks and no cell service. So here I am dealing with the repercussions of it.
Kojak has like a 4G LTE like thing like stapled to the friggin' tree outside of his house. They don't even allow that shit in his neighborhood. Anyway, we got a pretty loaded episode for you guys and gals out there. We had a lot go on in a certain position group here today. The wide receiver position group. Couple deals went down today. Went down the last couple of days. Judy extending with the Browns and Mike Williams getting a deal worth up to $50 million with the Jets over for one season. I guess these deals mean a little bit, and we had the KJ Osborne deal as well, but I guess these kind of mean a little bit more to this podcast, obviously a little bit Patriots skewed here, that these are both, I don't want to call them cost effective, but both affordable deals for productive wide receivers. Burge, what were your takes when you saw these deals come over the wire here? Maybe start with Judy and go into Williams.
Yeah, Judy, I think that's it seemed high to me with the Browns. Obviously, I'm not 100% sure about their cap situation right now, but I just haven't seen anything that he's done that has kind of warranted that much guaranteed money to come through an extension for him. And he had another year on his deal, right? So, I mean, obviously they make the trade for him. But they didn't really give up much to get him, which was, you know, surprising to begin with. We talked about it on a previous episode, but wouldn't you want to kind of wait and see on that to see like what he turns into with Cleveland? I think it was like 41 million guaranteed over 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years. Right. I got the numbers right here. It's 3 years, 58 million total, 41 million guaranteed in the first 2 years of the deal. So like you said, it is an extension. So he has this year on his deal still, but the first 2 years are almost 20 million guaranteed a season.
Yeah, I haven't really seen anything from him. I mean, he was a first round pick, I believe, you know, yeah, when he was drafted, and he was a very highly touted prospect when he came out from Alabama. But I even remember hearing vaguely about some, I don't want to say character concerns, but some issues he had towards the end of his time in Denver. Maybe it was last year with Russell Wilson. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember hearing that.
So I'll never knock a guy for not getting along with Russell.
No, me either. But I mean, it is so Cleveland. I mean, they gave Deshaun Watson, coming off his whole legal debacle, that guaranteed contract. And now they're doing this with Judy. Again, hasn't really earned it, in my opinion, yet. But from a Patriots standpoint, I wanted them to do that all day.
Yeah,
given the draft
and the money. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, given the holes that the Patriots have there. Now, Mike Williams, a little bit more of a, I'd like to see how the incentives break down on that deal, because I don't think he's played a full season in, God, maybe his entire career. I don't know if it's been that long, but
he played a full season in 19 and 21 and had 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns in both of them. So,
but that's it. Yeah, his potential's there, but he seems like he's always hurt. Now, it's an intriguing option for the Jets, especially with Aaron Rodgers again coming off that injury, to try to take that next step, what everybody thought they were going to do last year. So I don't hate it. I wanted the Patriots kind of to stay away from him, so I'm not really anything for the Patriots on that front there. But yeah, definitely interesting to see these wide receivers get signed while the Patriots are out there signing wide receiver threes.
Yeah, a couple of
them. So we can talk about that in a little bit, but
makes you think of what they're doing at three. Hogan, what do you think about this wide receiver market kind of shaping up right now?
For me, I'm looking at the Judy thing is it's just a risk reward, right? I mean, Bird, you touched on the fact that Williams is always hurt. Judy's got the character issues, but at that point, it's kind of flip the coin. What do you prefer, the character issues or the injury bug? I'd rather have a guy that you can work on and get on the field. And yeah, he may be a douchebag. Granted, he had the whole blow up with, you know, was it Steve Smith on the sidelines during that game? And Russell Wilson is who he is, so it is what it is. But the guy has – Judy has the potential as well. I mean, Williams showed what he can do healthy, but you can't teach health. You can teach how to not be a douche, especially depending on who you're going with there. I mean, I always go back to the – what was it? Corey Dillon coming to the Patriots in the early 2000s, and the knock on him was that he was just like – he was a lost cause, getting arrested all the time, that he wasn't worth anything. We brought him in and he sets, a record for the Patriots his first year there, surrounded by good people that can help him and fix what he needs to be. Will it happen with Judy? I don't know, but I'm thinking the Browns are at this point thinking, hey, you know what? It's worth giving him a shot, giving him the money, and let's see what we can do with him. And if it doesn't pan out, it doesn't pan out.
I mean, hopefully playing next to that's a good point, but hopefully dovetailing off that, hopefully playing with Cooper will be a situation where he can play more of the wide receiver too. And not, I mean, I know Cortland Sutton was more of the wide receiver one there kind of down the stretch with Russ last season, but you get him in an offense where he's not the primary pass catcher. You get him in an offense where they have players like Amari Cooper who've been there, done that, had the elite seasons, had consistent success in the NFL. So hopefully you can kind of see that rubbing off on a young player like that. Because, Hogan, you're right. You can't teach health. You can't teach not getting soft tissue injuries. And the way that Mike Williams plays the game, just no regard for human life and his own. He'll go up, he'll reach out, he'll make that play that gets him hurt. He's extending himself, which is getting those injuries. Couple that with the fact that he might be injury prone to begin with, I think obviously makes it so he doesn't play a bunch of games like we've seen the last couple of years. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with Judy. He got paid on potential. If you can get his head screwed on straight in the right system, kind of with the right guys and the momentum going forward, it would look like a steal. I mean, 3 years, $60 million to a wide receiver that is going to be, has the projection to be elite, could end up being a steal with some of the money we see going out to different players, especially guys like Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill, kind of getting, I don't want to say going over the hill, especially Davante Adams. You're going to have a new crop of receivers, kind of like the Chases and the Jeffersons, and they're kind of hoping that Judy kind of follows that ilk and kind of catches on somewhere else. I mean, he had two seasons, his rookie season and last year, but the year before, he had over 900 yards. So it's not like he's an unproductive receiver. His catch rate on his target, like he's had two seasons with over 100 targets, and he hasn't converted those into 1,000-yard seasons, which is kind of tough. But, I mean, like I said, him being wide receiver two gives him a little bit more big playmaking ability where he's not getting the double coverage like Amari Cooper is going to get. So hopefully we can see him kind of turn into something that would be worth that deal. I kind of want to hit on one more current event before we kind of get turned into this episode and kind of release a new segment here going forward in the offseason. But, Burge, what do you think about the Osborne pickup for the Patriots?
You know, I like it. I like the player. It doesn't seem like obviously it's enough for what they need. He's not the type of receiver that they needed to have. Like they have three guys on the roster now that fit the same kind of role that Osborne has played. Maybe he can take a step forward. I mean, I think it's only his second contract. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe they're signing him on potential too. Who knows? I like the player, and he has shown up a bit, at least in the highlights that I've seen from Minnesota over the last few years, but it's just kind of like meh, like great. Like you got a good player. Like I'm okay with that, but like, it doesn't move the needle for me in terms of the talent on the offense. Like they got Kendrick Bourne, they got Douglas, they got Juju Smith-Schuster still on the roster. They're all the same type of player in my opinion. So like, Somebody's got to be the odd man out of that group, right? Like, unless Osborne is able to take a step forward, but I don't see it yet. Obviously, there's a long way to go. They have to play football for us to actually see it. So who knows? But again, like the player, but doesn't move the needle for me at all.
Couldn't agree more. Now, I think if you take that wide receiver room and add a player like Marvin Harrison Jr. to it, I think you're cooking with gas. I'm not a big Marvin Harrison Jr. guy at three. But I know somebody who is, which I'd love his opinion on this deal for the Patriots. Hogan, what do you think about the Osborne pickup?
I don't hate it. I don't hate it at all. He was, like Birch touched on, he was very productive in Minnesota. For me personally, I would have loved to have seen us take a stab at Hunter Renfrow, though. That dude was just unbelievable in they were Oakland at the time, right? With the Raiders, he was phenomenal. I mean, even paired up with Davante Adams there, he lit it up like whenever he had a chance to. Derek Carr throwing him the ball. So it would have been nice to see like another, you know, Amendola. I know we're a little anti Amendola right now with everything going on, but I'm saying in terms of like Edelman, Amendola, one of those guys coming in and just nailing it in the slot like, you know, Renfrow can do. And then even then, Renfrow still was a number two guy in Vegas with the time that he had there until he got pushed out for whatever reason by McDaniels. But again, it's still not a bad signing. Like Burge said, we'll see what happens. At the end of the day, it matters who's throwing him the ball.
Now, the only caveat I have here, and this is Bird Brain Joe just left to his own devices, but... Bears just like, oh fuck, turn the recording off now. We're about to get canceled. No, but my head instantly goes to the Vikings are really good at drafting wide receivers and cultivating that talent. Why aren't they re-signing this guy? If it's
good point.
It's the same thing with the Steelers cast off, like going after Deontay Johnson, the Panthers. It's at a point now where these teams are so fucking good at drafting that position. And if they don't retain the talent, I almost trust their scouting department over any other team, you know what I mean? Over another team that might not be as good at drafting and developing that position. But like you guys said, another wide receiver, 2-3, something's got to give here. It smells like a late camp cut for somebody that we're not seeing in the wide receiver group, but I wouldn't be surprised if they drafted at the position and carried six all year. I mean, you need to, it's one of those positions where, if you're not going to go get that big fish, you got to start throwing shit at the board to see if something fits. You got to do something there.
Yeah, you said that right when I shared the news that he got signed. You're like, take as many darts as you can. I'm like, that's where I'm at. Like, they've had such trouble identifying wide receiver talent, and I personally, I don't believe it's going to change that Bill Belichick's gone, because again, all the same guys are there. So I don't believe it's necessarily going to change unless they do take like the surefire talent in Marvin Harrison Jr. at three. I don't foresee them doing that based on what we've heard so far, but yeah, as many dart throws as you can. Maybe you hope Booty shows up this year and does something finally.
Or yeah, you gotta Douglas hope takes another step forward things in Massachusetts before you get fucking that dude on the field.
Yeah, dude. But
that's probably why Ridley didn't want to come. He's like, fucking sports gambling is legal, and I got some fucking and I got some horrible influences on the fucking team. I'm staying the fuck out of there. And they're gonna take 40% of my paycheck. No, thank you, dude.
but Hogan kind of hit the nail on the head about Hunter Renfrow. I mean, that dude was him that year. I think it was 2021. He had over 100 receptions that year, and he seemed like they were always feeding him the ball, and they made the playoffs that year. That was the year I think Gruden got fired. It was the year Gruden got fired, and he was an absolute beast. It seemed like the ball was always finding him, and everybody was at the time then was like, this guy's a Patriot. This is exactly the type of guy that the Patriots offense employs. And yeah, it's kind of interesting that they didn't take a stab at him, but maybe, you know, he's what, 29, I think now, 28, 29. Maybe they're like, yeah, we want somebody a little bit younger. That's probably the reason.
And it looks like they're trying to do a little bit of a youth movement right now with who they're bringing back and who they're signing as well. So hopefully, hopefully that trend continues. If they're in for a slow build and quote unquote doing it the right way, that's fine. Just pick a fucking direction is my whole thing. And maybe I think the last signing we'll touch on today, which has a little bit of a Patriots and AFC East component to it, is Tyron Smith. To the Jets on a pretty team-friendly deal. Hogan, haven't heard from you in a minute, dude. What do you think about the Tyron Smith deal up to New York?
If I'm being honest, like I love it. It's perfect for them. It's perfect for what they need. Kind of perfect for what he needs. It's the 1 year deal. It's team friendly. He's got a chance to protect Aaron Rodgers if he plays this year. I mean, the Jets are kind of. I can't believe I'm about to say the sentence, but the Jets are actually loading up to make a run right now. I mean, if everybody stays healthy on that team right now, that's a dangerous team that they can put on the field between their star-studded defense, the offense that they're building. Again, this all hinges on the health of Aaron Rodgers, because we saw immediately what happened when he went down four plays into the season last year. But that offensive line is ready to go. You got, you know, a healthy Breece Hall. You got Mike Williams. If he can stay healthy, Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball over the place with the young kid there too.
Garrett Wilson.
I mean, would you say no to that offense right now? Patriots uniforms, that's what I mean. So yeah. I love it. And then real quick, I know we're talking about Tyron Smith, but I just want to shout out. Don't let the door hit you on the way out to Trent Fatty Williams. Goodbye. Have fun in Bungles territory with Joe Cool. Asshole.
Oh, Trent Brown. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trent Brown. Sorry. He's not even worth getting the name right. So screw him.
Don't even no apologies needed here, buddy. But yeah, I think Barry's almost echoes the same sentiment, right, bud?
Yeah. I'm like right there, dude. Like, I wish the Patriots would have taken a stab at this guy. I know the guys had health problems, but like they have no left tackle right now. And for that contract, Joe, and you and I went back and forth on this in the group chat about the Patriots actually getting him to sign that type of contract. I wouldn't even care what the total guaranteed money on that was. I don't care if it's 6.5 or if it's 10 or if it's 12 at that point. Like, you need somebody. So I think it's a great move for the Jets, obviously, if he can stay healthy. And, you know, talking about the Jets offense, I did see a mock draft today that had them moving up to like 5. Selecting Marvin Harrison Jr. at 5.
Oh my God, dude.
Could you imagine that offense if you insert him in there? Like,
Marvin Harrison Jr. is your third fucking wide receiver.
And like, you're talking about them going for the division at that point, not even going for a wild card. You're talking about them going for the division. So that'd be scary if that actually happens. I think it's unrealistic to expect that to actually happen for Harrison to drop that far beyond like 4. I think 4 is probably where he gets taken if the first 3 are quarterbacks. So, Definitely some interesting storylines going into the draft, right?
No, Arizona's in the 4 spot, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the big thing. I mean, they have no wide receivers. They traded Rondell Moore. They got rid of Hollywood Brown. He's with the Chiefs now. They're literally going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. if we don't take him, or whoever in the top two, Washington. And then we all know they're all taking quarterback, so he's going top four.
It was so the mock draft I saw was from Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network. Again, I don't put a whole heck of a lot of stock into this because it's kind of interesting. I'm going to read it off to you real quick. And they have three, Jaden Daniels going at three to New England. So I think that we're starting to see that possibility start to drop, where Washington, I think, is going to end up with him there at two. They have, he has Minnesota moving up to four with Arizona to take J.J. McCarthy at four.
Wow.
A little high for me. I don't think that's actually going to happen. But then they have the Jets moving up with the Chargers at five to get Harrison Jr. And I sit there and I think, well, the Chargers just gave up. They just cut Mike Williams and they traded Keenan Allen. I think at five, they're going to be all over wanting to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. there. Right. So again, this guy also had Michael Penix going at 13 to the Raiders. And I think everything that we've heard about Penix is he's going late first or early second round. So take it for what it's worth with a grain of salt, but somebody thinks it's going to happen.
I saw something today. It was from our former guest, Shiloh, huge Jets guy. Shout out, Shiloh. It was a mock draft where the Patriots moved back to with the Vikings. They got 11, 23, and a fourth. And they ended up with who's the wide receiver out of Washington, Owuze. They ended up with Owuze. Him. Yeah, they ended up with him and the tackle out of Baylor at like 23. So they filled the wide receiver. They filled wide receiver and left tackle by trading out of that three. So my whole thing is if you're not in love with the player at three, regardless who it is, you got to trade out and fill two positions. I'm starting to get more and more and more enticed by the whole Marvin Harrison Jr. aspect because of the lack of talent the Patriots have at that position. It's Hogan said it on last episode. You have a position of need. You have a can't miss prospect. Don't fucking overcomplicate it. And there is a lot of merit to be put behind that. My thing is I'm a perfectionist. I want to plug as many holes at one time as I can. Pause. And then I want, I think trading out of three would be the best way to do that. But if they hit three, it really doesn't fucking matter what they do, right? If they hit on Marvin Harrison Jr. and it's Jacoby Brissett being fuck it, Marvin Harrison Jr.'s down there somewhere all year, I'm down with that. If they trade out and they hit on a wide receiver and a left tackle, I'm down with that. So I guess we're kind of at a point here where, like I said a couple minutes ago, just stick your foot in the ground, pick a direction, and just fucking run with it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just going to say this based on that trade that you just suggested. I hope they're getting more than 11 and 23. I want more than 11 and 23 and a fourth. I want more.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a potential at franchise quarterback and a game-altering wide receiver left at three, let's say Williams and Daniels or Williams and May go, and then you have the third quarterback and a wide receiver, I hope that they play their hand a little bit better to get more than a fourth. I know the two firsts is probably a starting point. So, like, I would be down with, like, two firsts and, like, next year's second and, like, this year's fourth, something like that. You just gotta make sure that you have, if you're actually going to take it out of three, you actually have the bullets in the gun to actually hit the target once or twice after you get those picks.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to hand it over to my cohort, my co-host Burge here. We're going to introduce a new section, a new segment going here in the off season. We're going to trickle it in probably maybe once or twice a month. And it's going to great dovetail off our wide receiver segment from earlier in the show. Burge, take it away, man.
All right. So this is an unnamed segment. We don't have a name for it yet. I don't know if we want to do it.
Send them in if you got them.
We're taking suggestions, so feel free to send them in. But we're going to start breaking down our all-time top five players at position groups throughout the offseason here. So we're going to start. Obviously, today's theme is wide receivers. All right. So we're going to break down our top five all-time wide receivers. Hopefully everybody's got their list ready to go.
Oh, this was I was going over like Pro Football Reference, like this is through the film today, dude. I had fucking pins on the wall with string going between them, dude. It was big.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I was doing the same thing. I'm all ready to go. The way I want to do this is I want to count down from five. So I want to get everybody's five, and then I want to go through everybody's four and three and all the way to the top. I know we're gonna overlap quite a bit, but I think it's gonna be great for you to defend your position on it and why you think that player should be there.
Love it.
So we're gonna start with number five. Joe, I'm gonna go to you first here. All right. So I want to hear who your fifth best receiver of all time is.
So when I go greatest of all time list, of course, yeah, you're not just going to get an answer out of me. I gotta take the mic here. But my greatest of all time is I want to see you have to have some combination of being the best at your position at some point in time, having longevity, and then making those two things mesh. Either be the best and far and away the best for a shorter period of time, or you have to be close to the best or near the best for an extended period of time. Now, the latter description is what brings me to my fifth selection. My fifth greatest receiver of all time, in my opinion, is Steve Smith Sr. I don't know if anybody expected to see this name on this list today, but my quick little elevator pitch for him. He had 8 1,000-yard seasons, one at the age of 35, and three total in his 30s. He had 11 years in between his first 1,000-yard season and his last 1,000-yard season. He had a 17-year career where he had receptions in all 17. And then this last point is a little bit – I'm trying to fudge it a little bit here, but he never really played with an elite passer. And he played with Cam Newton and Joe Flacco at the end of his career. But I know I'm the biggest Cam Newton guy. I think you fucked him, Tebow. Cam Newton is the best, had the best one season ever by any college player of all time. He won a national championship with zero draft picks on the offense. He had one player, the starting running back, go in the NFL, and he won. I don't care if his dad took $200,000 from a car dealership. That's the best season of all time in the NCAA as a quarterback. But in the NFL, he was never an elite passer. He was a very good passer and an absolute freak athlete. That's what made him who he was. So I got Steve Smith Sr. as my number five wide receiver of all time. Longevity, and also in the middle of his career, he had a couple seasons there where he led the league in receptions per game, reception yards per game, and yards total.
Awesome. It's good justification. Hogan.
Well, I definitely wasn't expecting Steve Smith Senior there. That was a hell of a pick, Joe. No, I'm genuine. It's interesting. I was going to open this up by saying that. So number five is probably going to be my controversial pick, and I'm okay with that because I have a current player in my number five spot. Ooh. Right now. Burgess knows who it is because I spoke to him a little bit about this a few weeks ago. Joe, I'll give you a hint. He's currently in the AFC East.
Stephon Diggs?
Oh, God. Get out.
Oh, Tyreek Hill?
Oh, my God. Diggs. Yeah. Come on. Get out.
I honestly couldn't remember who it was, and that was the first guy that popped into my head, too.
Both of you.
I thought you were trying to piss Berjov. You picked Josh Allen, fifth best wide receiver of all time.
No. I got to go with Tyreek Hill because if you think about, like, especially with the criteria that you described for Smith, think about what Tyreek Hill has done. Granted, I don't think he's the best human being on the planet, but in terms of a football player, straight up, what he was able to accomplish with Mahomes, and then on top of that, what he's doing right now with Tua throwing him the ball. Imagine if there's no injury history there, he should have crushed 2,000 yards this year. And granted, I know he's got 17 games and all that, but what Tyreek Hill is, he's got to be the most feared receiver in today's NFL. Like,
oh, not even close.
If you don't double him, if you don't have a safety over the top, everybody's already crapping themselves because he's about to score a 70-yard touchdown on you, regardless of who the quarterback is. That's the crazy part. And he went from, like, possibly the greatest quarterback of this generation to Tua, and he's still lighting it up. That's the most insane part. So number five, I got Tyreek Hill. As much as I dislike him, he's number five for me right now. And actually, believe it or not, it was a very hard toss-up between him and Mike Evans for that number five spot.
Mike Evans is an underrated guy.
Dude, that's funny. Those are the three players I was going. It was Mike Evans, Tyreek Hill, and Steve Smith Sr. for the fifth overall. But I tried to get away from the recency bias, but I'm glad you stuck him in there because Tyreek Hill is an absolute force, dude.
Yep.
Absolutely. So my number five choice, let me preface this by saying that I put a lot of emphasis on longevity for a player. He doesn't necessarily need to be the top guy for that period of time, the entirety of his career. But I put a lot of emphasis on longevity because of what the game of football, how physical it is, and how most of these guys, a lot of the guys end up tapping out because of injuries or, you know, they slow down because of their body falls apart and all that. So number five, I have Larry Fitzgerald at number five.
Fuck yeah.
The dude missed, I believe it was 9 games over the course of his career, and he played 16 seasons. Like, that's absurd for me. And he, like Steve Smith, never really played with an elite passer. He was stuck in Arizona, and, you know, there was a lot of dumpster fire years when he was down there. Obviously, they went to the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner as their quarterback, but, I mean, he had Kurt Warner, Carson Palmer, and then a whole bunch of nothing. Maybe he had Kyler Murray his last year, but at that point, he's 37 years old. So, like, I don't consider Kyler Murray an elite passer either. So the fact that he was able to sustain that, he had multiple 1,000-yard seasons, double-digit touchdowns, everything. And I just love the way that he played the game. And it's a shame that he didn't end up winning a title in Arizona. I was really rooting for them against the Steelers when they were there. But that Santonio Holmes catch obviously ruined everything. So, but yeah, my number five is Larry Fitzgerald. Absolute beast. Never ran into any problems. Never heard his name dealing with any BS. Yeah. Great guy. Great ambassador of the game, too. So I factored that in a little bit as well. So my number five is Larry Fitzgerald. Let's move on to number four. Number four. Hogan, I'm going to go to you first on this one.
I love it. Real quick tidbit about Larry Fitzgerald. I remember at one point, I believe he had more tackles in his career than he had drops, which is fucking insane as a wide receiver that you can have more tackles than drops. Anyway, to piggyback off of your Larry Fitzgerald pick, I like to go in the opposite direction in terms of character with my number four pick. I'm going with everybody's favorite. Get your popcorn ready. Terrell Owens.
Let's go.
No, fuck him. I don't like him. He's a douchebag, but he's absolutely one of the best receivers of all time for a reason. He played forever. Again, started his career very similarly, I would say, to Fitz and a couple other guys that just didn't have anybody thrown to him. I think his quarterback in San Fran was what, Jeff Garcia for
part of his career. Yes, it was. Him crying on the sidelines after that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, character-wise, the dude was a dink. Everybody knows he was a putz. As a player, though, you can't argue with the numbers, the talent, everything he brought. I mean, no matter what team he went to afterwards, like, automatically you thought to yourself, okay, they're kind of in a contender spot now because you knew how good T.O. was. And the one shining moment for him that I will give, to this day, I will die on this hill that I give him all the credit in the world. Dude breaks his leg and plays against the Pats in that 04 Super Bowl. And honestly, like, he almost could have won MVP in that Super Bowl the way he played. Even if they were losing side, he was phenomenal against a young, in his prime, Asante Samuel. So I hate him, but you got to respect him. Number four, T.O.
All right, I'm going to go next here because I have the same guy as Hogan at number four. It's Terrell Owens. Again, he started his career actually with Steve Young as his quarterback in San Francisco. But yes, eventually it did move on to Jeff Garcia. My shining moment or memory of T.O. is when he went and he slammed the ball down on the star in Dallas. Yeah. And George Teague comes out of nowhere after a touchdown and just levels him. Absolutely levels him. I'm not going to take too much time. I'll echo everything that Hogan just said about the guy. Even when he went to Buffalo in 2009 at age 36, like, I was like, as a Patriots fan, 2009 was a tough year. Yeah, like that transition year for the dynasty for the Patriots. I was worried that he went to Buffalo. He carried that stigma around. Obviously, he was with Tony Romo and had the whole press conference after the Romo fumble. That's my quarterback. You know, the famous meme going around.
Oh, yeah.
But his talent was undeniable. He was a beast for so long. Same thing. Number four, Terrell Owens. Joe?
See, I purposely left him off my top five. Like, this is – you guys made great points. I think T.O. is the most overrated fucking diva of all fucking time, dude. Some of the worst fucking hands you'll ever see on a professional wide receiver, dude. He had more drops. His drop percentage out of all the guys with 10,000 yards is like two times all of them, dude. I think he would be a person that would have been even better if he played in this day and age with the gloves and the technology they have now, especially with the fact that you can't touch wide receivers. His combination of size and speed would have been a fucking problem. Like, guys like him, Keyshawn Johnson and shit like that, like, I think they would have flourished in today's NFL. But I'm not the biggest T.O. guy. But that's more of a personal thing than it is anybody else. But speaking of the Harrison family, I'll take us to the fourth pick. I have Marvin Harrison Sr. When we talk about longevity and top of the game, I know he played with Peyton Manning, so that's a little bit of a caveat. Still got to catch the ball and run for your fucking life. Dude, there was nothing better than when they were playing the Broncos in a playoff game and Peyton Manning hit Marvin Harrison over the middle and he went down to the ground immediately and nobody touched him and he jumped right up. And
yep, like, I remember that.
Fucking touchdown. Just like game smarts and football smarts. He was so far above a lot of people, dude. I got a couple quick hitter like stats here for my elevator pitch. He led the league in receptions twice, yards six times, and TDs six times. Sorry, that was the wrong player. he led the league in receptions and yards twice each and TDs once. In 2002, listen, this 2002, this is his stat line. In 2002, 22 fucking years ago, okay? Before they put all the rules in place to absolutely make the passing game go crazy. This is his 2022 stats. 143 receptions, 1,700 yards, 11 touchdowns, 108 yards per game, and wait for this, 92 first downs off his receptions, 92 chain moves on his receptions. So my last point here is he was a perfect mix between a player that can move the chains and can hit for a big play at any fucking time. Marvin Harrison Sr. is going to be my number four.
I like it. He's one that I've, you know, spoiler alert, I've left off my list, but it was tough for me not to include him. It was tough because of how dominant that he was for so long with Peyton Manning down there in Indianapolis. But let's move on to number three. I'm going to go first this time. My number three choice, Megatron, Calvin Johnson. Absolutely loved. I was mad that he was so high in the draft his year he came out, because I remember watching him in college and just being like, this guy is a fucking animal.
Dude, he was a top 10 pick in Georgia Tech's offense. They ran the triple option.
Exactly. Like, he was unbelievable. And it continued in the NFL. Now, this is where I go against my longevity take here, because he did retire early. He only played eight seasons. I think it was eight seasons.
Nine.
But he played all with one team, which I respect the hell out of that, especially with that being the Detroit Lions when they were going through their whole part of their suck bag, you know, tenure in the NFL up until this past year. I'm a Detroit Lions fan now. Don't worry.
Calvin Johnson, come on the pod.
Absolutely. But you look at his numbers, dude. He was on the field like so dominant. Like I don't even know how to put it into words. Like, almost eclipsed 2,000 yards in 16 games. Went over 1,000 yards for every year except for two in his career. And that was, you know, 2 years prior to Matt Stafford showing up, and then Matt Stafford showed up, and, you know, obviously everything went through the roof once he was there, and just an absolute dominant force. I remember towards the end when he was retired, quote, that I wanted the Patriots to call him up in, you know, 2016. Could you imagine him in that offense? We wouldn't be even talking about 28-3 if Megatron was here, because he's just that dominant, and he retired at the age of 30. He was like, that seems like it's a thing for Detroit, you know, with Barry Sanders, and that, you know, their two of their best players ever retire early. And honestly, I can't really say I blame them, be considering like, what's he going to do? Put his body through something there where they're not going to win anything. And I think he probably valued the idea of finishing with one franchise where he played his entire career, which I respect the hell out of, But yeah, give me Calvin Johnson, number three. If he played a little bit longer, maybe won something a little bit, I'm probably elevating him up this list just because of the pure talent that he brought and the fact that defenses had to deal with him. Basically, he was the offense at that point. So Calvin Johnson, number three. Joe?
Yeah, I hate to let everybody down, but for once, me and Bears are in lockstep.
Oh, my God.
I want to echo everything Bear said. The dominance that he had over his nine-year career, he was for seven out of his 9 years, he was the best wide receiver in football, bar none. And the last thing, I have 2 points I want to leave you guys with. The first point is this three-year stretch that he had from 2011, 12, and 13. 2011, 96 receptions, 1,700 yards, 16 touchdowns. 2012, 122 receptions, 1,900 yards, 5 touchdowns. 2013, 84 receptions, 1,500 yards, 12 touchdowns. That's just an absolutely ridiculous three-year stretch.
Over 100 yards a game.
Yeah, for 3 years in a row. And you'd think that by the time the second and third year rolled around that maybe somebody would figure out how to cover him, and it didn't happen. And then the last point, he played 9 seasons, and if you take his totals and divide them by 9, he averages over 81 receptions a year, over 1,300 yards a year, and almost 10 touchdowns a year. That's average for his 9 seasons in the league. It's just fucking ridiculous, bro.
Unbelievable. Like I said, dude, guy was a freaking monster. Earned his nickname. Absolutely earned his nickname, Megatron. So, Hogan, who you got at number 3?
Oh, boys, you're going to be mad. And I apologize ahead of time. I was going to go with Megatron. I was going to go with Calvin Johnson. I thought long and hard, and I had to really stifle the homer in me, that Patriots homer.
Boo!
I am going number 3, our boy Randy Moss. Number 3, all time. I got to stick to my guns. As much as I love him, as much as I appreciated him, as amazing and truly talented as he was, Moss was undeniably the greatest when he was with Minnesota until he came to us in 2007. And then outside of that, he had a pedestrian career outside of Minnesota and the Patriots. He had it. And I hate to say that because I love him. And again, I appreciate everything. But if you look at, like I said, his numbers, I mean, his first 6 years in the league, more than 8,000 yards receiving, 77 touchdowns. And then he just fell off the face of the earth when he went to Oakland for 2 years until we snatched him up with that fourth round draft pick. And then he exploded the 1 year, had kind of an okay year with Matt Castle. And then 2009, we all know what happened with all that. I should say, 2009, he came back, he was okay. And then 2010 was when we traded him back to Minnesota. And then he kind of was a ghost of himself with Tennessee and the 49ers after that. He was there, but again, I don't want us to be dumping on Randy Parade because I do love him. I do appreciate him. But for me, if it was that continued success from day one all the way through, I'd have him higher. But give me Randy Moss at number 3.
We've lost Burrish.
That's fine. I knew he would.
That's a joke.
I mean,
Joe, go.
Who do you want? You want my number 2?
Go number 2. You first.
All right,
go.
So that was the end of number 3. So here's the first pick of the second round. I have Jerry Rice as my second best wide receiver of all time. So I gave you a little prelude before. Led the league in receptions twice, yards 6 times, TDs 6 times. Only player to ever have 20,000 yards. He has 22,000 and change. And he had 11 straight 1,000-yard seasons. He had multiple 1,000-yard seasons after the age of 35. He's the only – and just like Hogan, I don't want this to turn into a shit on fucking Jerry Rice session, but there's a lot of players that you could probably put back in time and give them Stickum and Joe Montana and those loaded 49ers team and probably make a dent. But longevity, best at your position, there's nobody that takes those two things and runs with it more than Jerry Rice. I got Jerry Rice at number 2.
Hogan.
All right. Well, I had to stick Randy at 3, and you guys had him at number 3 for you guys. I got to give Calvin Johnson Megatron the number 2 spot. I'm going with it. I mean, we're not going to beat a dead horse. You guys already touched on a lot of his things, but the fact that I'll just throw this out there. And I know, Joe, you might have touched on the stats a little bit, but the fact that this guy posted 1,300 yards and 12 touchdowns for an 0-16 team. How can you not appreciate greatness on just a giant pile of dog shit that was the Detroit Lions in 2008? Calvin Johnson, number two, he would be absolutely 100% number one had he played longer. Give me Calvin Johnson, number two.
I like it. And, you know, you echo that point about him doing that on an 0-16 team. That was, you know, that was in at the time where the transition of the NFL was really going towards pass happy. I mean, you'd already seen it start to move, but it's not like what it was today. Like, there was still defense more involved. So love that pick. I too, Joe, have Jerry Rice at number two. We talk about longevity. I love the fact that he played until he was 42 years old. Like, that's unbelievable. Unheard of. You'll never hear that in today's NFL with a wide receiver like that. That's, and a lot of his records will never be touched or replicated in the NFL. Unless, of course, the fact that there's 17 games now, maybe you'll see it happen, but there'll be an asterisk attached to it because of Jerry Rice did it in 16. Like you said, best at his position, was dominant for a long period of time. But if you look at his stats after 34 years old, 35 years old, 1997 after that, just to echo kind of what Hogan was doing when he was bashing Randy Moss and it caused me to walk away from my desk, kind of pedestrian. I mean, he had a couple of 1,000-yard seasons in there, but, I mean, it was a lot. He was hurt a year there as well. But, yeah, he was a little bit pedestrian. As you would expect, as a guy gets older, you're going to expect that to happen. But the fact that he played as long as he did and the fact that he was as good as he was at the top of his game through those Montana years and then into the Steve Young years of the 49ers was, you know, unheralded. So I got Jerry Rice there at number two as well. Joe, I'm going to go to you for your number one.
So no drum roll or anything needed because I have somebody who's already been spoken about at number one. This player is by far, not even close, the most talented player to ever play the position. Coupled with the production that he had sporadically throughout his career, he is still a top five player in all statistical categories. Randy Moss is the best wide receiver of all time, and I don't think it's particularly close. If you gave Randy Moss 15 seasons of or 10 seasons of Joe Montana or 10 seasons of Tom Brady, you would see 22,000 yards get smashed. He would be the LeBron James of the NFL. He'd be the first person to 30,000 receiving yards. The dude, I'm going to rattle off some more stats here. 1,500 career yards, 156 career touchdowns, 16 yards of reception, which is the highest out of anybody with over 14,000 yards, which means it wasn't Deacon Duncan, which means he was beating his player every single time he needed to get open. He led the league five times in reception TDs. He had 1,300 yards as a rookie, 1,000 yards and 10 TDs in his first four seasons, and by far, this is subjective, but by far the best hands in NFL history. If you look up productivity and highlights all put together, Randy Moss is by far and away the most talented and greatest wide receiver of all time. He has so many fucking highlight plays. He has the game against Dallas on Thanksgiving, the three receptions for 160 yards. He has a one-handed catch over Darrell Revis in the back of the end zone. And not to mention the fact that his first year and only good year with Tom Brady, he set a record for touchdown passes, and they went fucking undefeated. The year before, they were in the AFC Championship game, and they lost five games. The next year, they add Randy Moss, and they don't lose anything and go right to the Super Bowl. Like, that's got to mean something. I understand his character issues, and I understand the lulls in his career, but the highest of highs coupled with a above average consistency based on the position. Give me Randy Moss over Jerry Rice any day in the greatest category.
I'm going next because that was like music to my ears, Joe. We don't often agree here, but like
a fucking crack of
you mouth. You validated me on this. I thought I was going to be kind of alone with Randy Moss on this, but Randy Moss is absolutely my number one. You hit the nail on the head. Hands down, the most talented receiver I've seen play for as long as he did. I mean, we know he fell off towards the end, as Hogan has so kindly pointed out. But The dude also has great mooning skills to the guys in Lambeau. Listen, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here, but like, I taught my 3.5-year-old to shoot the moon because of Randy Moss. And like, dude, the kid would come out of the bathtub and he would literally sit in the hallway and he would bend over and shoot me the moon. Unbelievable. Because of Randy Moss. He has a teddy bear that has Randy Moss on it and he knows how to say Randy Moss. So I'll end my tangent there. But dude, hands down, my personal favorite receiver. He was my personal favorite receiver before he came to New England.
Oh yeah.
I think I was actually with Hogan the day they traded for him. And we were hanging out. We were watching the NFL draft stuff. And we heard that we got Randy Moss. And we were all freaking fired up. And I don't think any of us, either of us, expected that they were going to have a record-breaking, you know, touchdown record-breaking season that year. And the whole undefeated thing was going to actually happen. But, like, we were jacked up to have him. His last year in Oakland was a subpar year. He had the character issues. You know, he didn't want to be. He was not happy there. And he's never been a guy that wore his – that hit his emotions from fans and from the media and from everybody. Like he was very outspoken on everything. You heard it, you know, with Minnesota, some of this, you know, listen to DJ Steve Porter's One Clap remix. Listen to it because they all comes out there. Straight cash, homie, baby. Hands down my favorite receiver of all time. And it may come off as biased, but dude, guy was an absolute animal. Even in the 3 years in New England, like, with Matt Cassel and then with Brady the year after, the year when kind of the dynasty, again, the transition was ongoing, the year he was dealt out, like, he's still effective. And like, obviously his character came into question at the end and he started to act up like he, you know, Randy Moss does, and he got shipped out. They made the right decision at the end of his career. But that dude taking the top off the defense was unbelievable to witness. And I'm still waiting for a receiver to really make me feel that way again about a guy. Like, Justin Jefferson's kind of there for me now in today's NFL, but like, Randy Moss, hands down. I don't even say it's not even close for me.
Hey, Randy, how are you gonna pay for those fines? Straight cash, homie.
Exactly.
But, nothing but my favorite Randy Moss memory was the first Giants game of the year, the 16th game of the year, where they were down by, I think, a field goal or a point late in the fourth quarter, and they needed a touchdown to break the record, and they needed a touchdown to win the game. And they, third and 10, go ball down the right boundary, touchdown, 50 yards.
Like, you see his hand go up being like, throw me the ball.
Sorry to go on a Patriots fucking circle jerk here, but what about the first game versus Miami? When Brady's literally just chucking the ball up and fucking Randy Moss has three guys hanging off him and catches it on his elbow of his
that right. It was the Jets.
Yeah, dude. And what about the fucking snow game versus the Titans, dude?
Yeah.
You just see Brady chuck it and you're like, what the fuck's going on here? And then you just see Randy Moss 10, 15 yards behind any fucking Titans defender. And you're like, what the fuck is going on here? When you couple his production with how fun he fucking was, and obviously it's a little recency bias. Not all of us saw Jerry Rice the entirety of his career. We saw him. My memory of Jerry Rice is him bitching about the fucking Tuck Rule game.
Exactly.
He's got sour grapes in my mind. But Hogan, I don't want to make this a bash fest.
If we have to go to Hogan now, if we have to go to him.
Come on. Let him have some fun.
No, you guys are all good. Trust me. Again, I want to reiterate that I loved Randy Moss. I have no ill feelings towards him.
What did Randy do to you?
He did not.
Come on the pod to have yourself.
Come on the pod. We'd love to have you. No, again, I love Randy and everything that he did for the Pats. Again, I just look at, again, you guys touched on a lot of great points. And again, I want to reiterate, I went to Calvin Johnson's stats during the 0-16 season as a point to why I had him higher than Randy, because like we talked about the Oakland years, he wasn't happy and everything like that, but he wasn't productive the way that, you know, your Megatron was. And then to go to my number one guy, it's got to be Jerry Rice. I'm sorry. For the longest time, everybody knew the GOAT of football before Tom Brady arrived was Jerry Rice. There was, statistically speaking, longevity wise, ring wise, everything, you, any statistic, record, whatever you wanted, if you went to the number one guy in the NFL, it was Jerry freaking Rice. There was no questioning that. And again, I look at, as again, not to knock Randy Moss, it took him 16 games to catch 23 touchdowns to break a record. And you know who held the record before that? Jerry Rice catching 22 touchdowns in 12 games. It took Randy four extra games to break the record by one touchdown. So again, I love you, Randy. I no ill will. I love
Come
you.
Come on the pod. You're
the absolute man. But it took you four extra games to beat a record that was 20 years old at that point, and you beat it by one touchdown with the greatest quarterback of all time throwing you the ball. So I love you, Randy. Everything's awesome. You're number three in my heart. I got to say it, but it's Jerry Rice until the cows come home, because he did extraordinary things when the expectation wasn't there. He wasn't a number one overall pick. He wasn't this guy coming out of college that was supposed to be the best of the best, like your Randy Mosses, like your TOs, everything else like that. Jerry Rice just blew away all expectations, did it for as long as he did, has the rings to back it up, has the records to back it up. We touched on the fact that it'll never get touched unless, you know, they go to 20 fucking games a season, which at this point, the NFL could probably do that. Jerry Rice, you're number one. Let's go.
Love it.
Yeah, I don't
love it. That. I love this. I love ranking these players. This was great. Listeners, we're going to have a Twitter poll out after this episode drops, so be on the lookout for that. We want you to tell us who got it right. We want you to tell us who got their rankings right. And we are going to continue this throughout the offseason. We're going to go through the different positions in football. We're going to do offense and defense. And we want to hear from you. We want to hear from you. We want you to, you know, shit on us. Tell us we're great. I mean, you can tell Joe and I we're great for having the right receiver at number one. Like, let's be real. But absolutely reach out to us. Let us know what you think, and be on the lookout here. I understand we might have a couple of honorable mentions here on wide receivers. I have one or two I'd like to get into, but Joe, I'll pass it off to you first.
So Hogan had one of my honorable mentions on his top five, which I'm glad we hit him. Tyreek Hill, obviously not a great guy, but I think that of this current generation right now, he is the gold standard at the receiver position. I don't think. Justin Jefferson, obviously, a couple seasons in, we know what he is. But a couple other guys I want to talk about is Davante Adams. How he put together a 1,000-yard season the last 2 years with the turmoil that's going on in Oakland/Las Vegas has kind of just shown how, like, useful of a player he is. Doesn't really matter who's throwing the ball. Could be Aaron Rodgers, could be Derek Carr, could be Jimmy Garoppolo or Aiden O'Connell. He's still going to be an effective player. He kind of meshes those two of like big play and like possession guy really, really well. I think he has great hands with big playability. So that's kind of what I look at in kind of judging wide receivers in all around and greatness is kind of your ability to do it all. So I think that Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill are like my two, like that could climb the list that we just laid out pretty quickly here based on like longevity later into their career. I mean, Davante Adams is already over 30. So I think if he puts a few more like 1,000-yard seasons together, he could be creeping into these conversations. And then a guy we got to give love to is Mike Evans, dude. Fucking love Mike Evans, dude. 1,000 yards in his first 10 seasons. He doesn't matter who's his quarterback. He could be Baker Mayfield, Brady, or fucking Jameis Winston. It doesn't matter. The dude's always producing. I don't know if you guys got other like honorable mentions like that, but I wanted to skew a little bit more current as obviously we cover the current NFL.
Absolutely. I do have a couple, and they've been talked about on here. Like Mike Evans, like no doubt, like I love that dude. Underrated receiver in today's NFL. He's been so consistent. Joe, you kind of just hit it on the head. Tyreek Hill was there for me as well, as Hogan included him on the list, but like he's there for me right now because of what he's doing currently in the NFL. And another one, and I'm going to go a little bit back on this, and he doesn't necessarily have the numbers because the game was different at that point, but Fred Biletnikoff was a guy back with the Raiders, played his entire career with the team, played until he was 35, which was kind of unheard of back in the 60s and the 70s.
Eric Cornell, dude. They changed the game.
Absolutely. And he's got a college award named after him. He's a Hall of Famer, you know, won a Super Bowl. And he was a beast during his time. The numbers necessarily aren't there because the game was different. But I mean, in 1971, he almost caught 1,000 yards. Like, think about that. 1971, He actually, you know what? Let me rephrase that. 1968, he did catch 1,000 yards. He went over 1,000 yards in a game where it was more run heavy versus pass heavy. So he's a guy that I would put on my honorable mention. Obviously, the game has changed so much now that he doesn't crack the top list, but he's there for me.
Hogan, who do you have on your honorable mention down there?
Real quickly, for my honorable mention, you got him on your list there, Joe, for a recent error guy. I got to go with Marvin Harrison. He was just, as much as I hated him with a burning passion, he's got to be up there with what he was able to do. Granted, Peyton Manning throwing him the ball certainly helped. But a little history buff that I am, I mean, Burgess touched on one of the guys already, but I do like me some Steve Largent as
well. He was a guy that was there for me too. I didn't say it.
He was the pinnacle of, like you said, back in the time when running the ball was king. I mean, through the 70s and 80s, this guy was he first off, white guy. So obviously, you know, at the time, you just got to say that, hey, you know, he's fucking talented because of what he was able to do. But he had 8 1,000-yard seasons, and that was despite playing through 2 NFL strike shortened seasons. That's incredible. That's, wow. That's
absolutely
incredible.
Played for the Seahawks too, right? Expansion.
He played for the Seahawks, and that's a big thing. Is he had, you know, Jim Zorn, you know, chucking the football at him, and that's not going to help you anything. But then again, this is probably a name that a lot of younger listeners will probably not know. But I'm going to throw it way back into the 30s and 40s here. Don Hutson.
Ooh.
He's crazy
legs. Back before, is that crazy legs?
I don't know if his name was Crazy Legs, but anyway, he was back in the era where it was just the traditional leather helmets. You got no face mask. You got barely any shoulder pads. I'm looking at a picture of him right now, and it looks like it's a billion years old, pretty much. However, one thing that jumps out at me is the fact that he probably played at the time that the forward pass was like legalized in the NFL, which is probably insane. But he had a record 99 career receiving touchdowns. That record was not surpassed until 40 years after he retired.
That's wild.
And he last played in the NFL in 1945.
That's crazy.
All 10 years with the Green Bay Packers. Like I said, I obviously haven't seen any footage of him playing, but just honorable mentions, just the fact that these guys were able to do what they did in their time eras, which is a big part of like this, where it's a great debate to have because you can make so many arguments about who could be the greatest at what time they played in and the way the games changed and adapted and evolved. But yeah, special shout out for any history buffs out there like me. I love going into the record books and finding out about these old guys that just tore it up back in the day. And that's what I got.
Love it. Love it. I just want to talk about Jefferson and Chase for a minute, because I think that if they continue and stay healthy, that they could end up cracking either the honorable mention or the top list here if they continue to put the statistics together. Obviously, we know the 17th game plays into that, but watching Chase and Jefferson play now when they're healthy, like, there's nobody else I would rather have on my team in today's NFL than those two dudes. Like, those two dudes can do it. It's funny they came from the same college too, right?
Same team, dude.
Yeah, same team. They put around the same team with Joe Burrow. Like, that's
Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and Justin Jefferson. That isn't that. No fucking wonder they went for 500 yards and won the national title. But I think, dude, watching Justin Jefferson is a treat, man. He's so fucking good, dude. And I think we've talked a lot recently about how the wide receiver pool is kind of bigger than it used to be. I think it just comes down to when you look, like, not to get philosophical, but you look in the 90s and the early 2000s, like, there's a shitload of fucking nasty pitchers and nasty players in the MLB. You know what I mean? And then you look recently and there's been more like wings in basketball and really skilled like wide receivers in football. You know what I mean? So I think what we're seeing now is like kind of the turnover of like where these athletes go to play. You know what I mean? I mean, you look in the NBA, like Anthony Edwards had full rides for football and basketball. He was a five-star recruited quarterback. Look at Terry Rozier. He was the same thing. You can go all the way back. Look at John Elway, was a two-sport athlete. Brady was a two-sport athlete. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're seeing now is just like you see trends in sports, you know what I mean, actually affecting the talent pool. And I think the fact that you're getting quarterbacks and wide receivers that are getting these crazy money. And now we're skewing the rules towards keeping those specific positions straight, safe. I think that you're seeing more players like gravitate to those positions. And I think that's a classic example of what's going on at the wide receiver position. More kids, when they roll out of bed in the morning, they want to be wide receivers. They say Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, DK Metcalf, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. They see all this influx, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Stephon Diggs. Like, you look at all of these like under 30 or under 30 year old wide receivers, and they're all coming out of like the same kind of draft classes. So we ranked the top five wide receivers today. And I think, I honestly think that you could see turnover at two to three of these positions that we put two or three of these rankings in the next 10 years, based on all the fucking talent that we have in the pipeline right now. I think it's crazy. It's every fucking draft you get a stud wide receiver. Even look at this last draft. You have like guys like Olave and fucking Smith and Jigba and like, yeah, Pickens and fucking Garrett Wilson, dude. The list goes on and on and on and on. And it's you got to take it one step deeper. Obviously, like, yeah, there's an influx of talent, but obviously it's coming from somewhere. And I think the rules and how we play the game now is just turning out wide receivers.
One thing I really wanted to touch on that Joe kind of jogged my memory there, talking about how these kids get out of bed and they want to be receivers and stuff. I think the turning point for that, honestly, unless correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Odell Beckham Jr.'s one-handed catch was the catalyst, because I don't think there was anybody on the planet that watches football and didn't see that and immediately think that's the greatest catch I've ever seen in my entire life. And all of a sudden, you get that influx of social media, your TikToks, your Instagrams, your Facebook. Every person on the planet was all of a sudden filming themselves catching the ball one-handed, trying to one-up that Odell Beckham catch. And that's where it just exploded in the popularity that it was, because you have these influential kids growing up. I mean, you see all the LSU guys. You touched on it right away. Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase, LSU. Where did Odell go to school? LSU. They all want – all those guys want to one-up that previous talent. And it's just, you're seeing such an influx of ridiculousness now at that position, because it's always, well, I'm going to do it better than the guy before me. And it's a freaking cool thing to watch as a fan. I'm not going to lie.
It's crazy to think that catch was almost 10 years ago.
Wasn't it 2013? Right? Wasn't it?
It was
literally
2014, I believe it was.
Oh my God.
I actually looked this up the other day when we were going back and forth about Odell Beckham in the Discord there, because I was like, how long has this dude been around and what were his numbers? And I'm looking, like, that catch happened in like 2014. That was the year of the Malcolm Butler Super Bowl. So that's also, again, 10 years ago coming up here next year at this point. So
Odell was legit his first like 3 years in the league too. Dude, like he had a chance to be elite.
Even with the Rams, dude, even when they won that Super Bowl, dude, he was a huge, before he tore his ACL.
He was
shout
MVP.
Shout out Odell Beckham Jr. for paying my rent in February of 2022, dude. You fucking, that first touchdown that you scored, brother, Kojak was right next to me. I was freaking the fuck out.
He was going to be MVP. He was going to be MVP of that game. He 100%. Didn't get hurt easily.
I want to bring his knees just went to bring shit. I want to bring another name to the table real quick before we plug her up here. But a player that's kind of snuck through the cracks here, who is definitely deserves mention, no matter how ridiculous he gets on Twitter, is Antonio Brown, dude. Antonio Brown probably had one of the best 6 or 7 year stretches out of any. I think he had 1,400 or 1,500 yards in like 5 or 6 straight seasons. And like, I don't know, like, the whole thing with Antonio Brown is like, if you kept him between the lines, like, he was the best player on the field. He was the best player on the field for a 5 year stretch. And there was really no argument against it. And I think this goes back to like, Tomlin got a lot of shit on this podcast from specifically Burge. But I think that regardless of his coaching, keeping that fucking guy under wraps for 5+ years, where you were a legitimate Super Bowl contender for those years, has to be, we need to fucking study that in psychology. Mm-hmm. We need to go back. We need to review the film in that facility, in the Steelers facility. We need to review that film. We need to figure out what he did. And then we need to put that film in the Smithsonian and see it forever. Because that is some of the best interpersonal communication and psychology that I've ever seen, dude. He is he must have been like the Phil Jackson of the NFL at that point in time, keeping him, Le'Veon Bell, and Big Ben all under wraps at the same time. Not to mention, you had guys like James Harrison and shit on those teams too.
I just want to say F Vontaze Burfict for what he did to him in the playoffs.
Where have you seen his senior picture from Chattanooga?
Who?
Antonio Brown.
No.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have. With him and JJ Watt, right? And they both
picture, he's just like, it looks like he's smiling with grills, but he has no grills on. So he Vontaze Burfict didn't make it happen, but he made it worse.
He accelerated it. Exactly. That hit that he took in that playoff game was, I personally believe that that's the reason why he is the way he is right now and going the way that he is right now on Twitter. But talking about playing, like, yeah, absolutely, like, best drop kick of a punter in the game has ever seen, right? That was an unbelievable moment when he just decides to try to leapfrog the dude and he sticks his foot out and he just decks him in the face. But no, hands down, Joe, I won't try to beat the dead horse with it. Like, you hit it on the head. He was unbelievable for that stretch period. And like, again, Vontaze Burfict doesn't happen. Maybe it lasts longer and he doesn't freaking storm off the field in New York with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I would say Antonio Brown come on the pod, but I don't know if we can handle that.
No, we don't want to get canceled, man.
No, maybe don't. Antonio Brown in a StreamYard room and let us fucking run. I'll give you guys 30 minutes of the best audio you guys have ever fucking seen.
I'll sit muted the whole time and just laugh.
Kojak, you got your editing skills. You're editing.
Joe and AV having a conversation would turn into a docuseries and Netflix would have to do something about it. I would pay actual money to listen to Joe and Antonio Brown have a fucking conversation.
That would be awesome.
That'd be electric. Electric. ESPN special 30 for 30. Joe Scherr sits down with Antonio Brown.
I was going to say, then we'll all know what it's like to get hit by Vontaze Burfict in the head after that conversation.
Yeah. All righty, boys. So this is one hell of a time every we record on Tuesdays, release on Thursdays, but this is one hell of a time every Tuesday night. I fucking love you boys.
Hell yeah.
Just want to give a little self plug here. No jokes. Self plug here. But me and Kojak, who we have here on the ones and twos, will be releasing a golf podcast in the coming weeks. It's going to be called Four Dudes, One Cart. We're going to be coming at you with just different kinds of golf lifestyle bullshit. We got idiots of all skill levels, so we'll be covering all bases there. So if you like golf, or if you just like the lifestyle, kind of like hanging around, being around the boys, that's kind of the vibe we're going to be bringing you guys. So can't wait to show everybody who listens to this and some new listeners that content as well.
I can't wait to check that out. If you can display that raw emotion that you showed in that video, of that pure joy that was going through your head. Like, dude, I watched that video of you sink that shot, and like, it genuinely made me like a happy person.
We're gonna be coming out with some full blown movies, buddy.
Yo, we're gonna be filming our
rounds, GoPros in the golf carts, mics attached to us, dude. Trust me, you're gonna be able to watch us for an hour and a half play golf and just fucking shit on each other.
Yeah, your boy holed out from like 130 yards, and I sent the video to like everybody I fucking knew. I like just hit send all to my contact list. And
your wife is a goat. Your wife is a goat for recording that moment.
Dude, I was screaming, I can't see the ball on the green the whole way up. And she's like, you know what? I might as well start taking a video. But seeing your ball in the bottom of the cup when it's not supposed to fucking be there is like talk about a podcast sponsored by Crisco, dude. I'm making this desk move, and my hands are both right here, bro. But anyway, football podcast, as always, the BTP podcast, Breaking the Plane, brought to you by Primetime Productions. You can find them on the internet at primetimeproductions.net. You can find them on X or Twitter at Primetime Prods. Other than that, for the boys, for myself, Joe, Burge, Hogan, and Kojak, we appreciate you guys sticking around for this long. Keep looking for more episodes coming out every Thursday. Interact with all the tweets. We hope to get your comments, concerns, and questions on air. But yeah, as for the BTP boys, we are out.
Peace.
Peace.